Hey, everybody. We have another VBAC story for you today from our friend Sammy, and she is actually local to me here in Utah. Hello, how are you?
Hi, I'm so good. Excited to be here.
So excited to share these stories. And I was kind of going over your story that it's just kind of crazy, like to think how some things can just twist like and turn and the unexpected can happen. And I love that about stories sometimes, and that I don't love that it happens, but I also love the uniqueness of that. Does that kind of make sense?
Yeah, I feel like literally and figuratively my baby's twist and then turns happen. So, yeah.
Yes, but it's important to know that, like, going into birth, even though we are planning one way, sometimes twists and turns can happen. And then it's up to us to kind of figure out how to navigate through that space. And it's not always easy. And it's okay to not always have it be easy. And then sometimes it is easy. And so that's another thing I wanted to talk about too, is like pointing out that to some, a twist and a turn might be like no big deal to someone. And then to some, it rocks their world. We're all in different spaces here. And you definitely, like you said, both figuratively and actually have some twists and turns. So we're going to share her story in just a minute. But of course, we do have a review of the week, and I just wanted to quickly share it. This is by, okay, I'm probably going to butcher this. It's like Medawaya. So sorry if you're listening and you're like, Kate, you're telling this so wrong. It says, I vote this plays on over the speaker in every OBGYN office. I love that. That's a cool topic or subject. It says, I cannot even begin to describe what encouragement these podcasts have been for me. I have completely binged on these the past few weeks, and they have grown my confidence for my up-and-coming VBAC baby. I cannot stop sharing everything I'm learning and even help encourage first-time moms on how to educate themselves to avoid a cesarean in the first place. Thank you so much for this no BS truth declaring and empowering platform that I know has encouraged so many more than just myself. Keep being amazing. I can't wait to share our story in just a few short months. All of my love. Oh, that's such a great review. I love that so much. I hope that you got your feedback and that all went well. And I'm so excited to hear that this podcast is doing exactly what we're intending it to do. Empower, educate, inform, and inspire people to know their options for birth after cesarean, and, like you said, how to avoid a cesarean in the first place. Hi, my name is Megan. Welcome to the VBAC Link podcast. I am a VBAC after two C-section mama, a wife, doula, and VBAC educator. This podcast was created to hold space for those wanting to know their options for birth after cesarean. It is a space where you will likely find yourself getting better educated, relate to stories like your own, and finding the inspiration to help you have a better birth experience. Although we will be sharing stories related to cesarean and VBAC, this podcast is for anyone and everyone who wants to receive evidence-based information and learn how to avoid unnecessary or undesired cesareans. The purpose of this podcast is to educate and inform. It is not meant to replace advice from any other medical professional. Hey everyone, this is Megan. Preparing for my VBA2C was pretty lonely at times. This is why I, along with Julie, created a Facebook community for all the parents preparing for their VBACs. You can find the link to the community in the episode notes today, or head over to facebook.com and search the VBAC Link community. This is our safe space to share our stories, tips, and advice on how to achieve a VBAC and ask each other questions. Just remember, studies show 60-80% of people who attempt a VBAC will be successful. We're here for each other on this journey. To join, go over to facebook.com and search the VBAC Link community and start feeling the love and support today. Taking a quick break to continue our earlier conversation about the importance of the right prenatals for pregnancy and beyond. As I mentioned, my favorite brand is Needed. Pregnancy and postpartum are the most nutritionally intensive times for a woman's life. You don't have to feel so terribly nauseated or so depleted in the postpartum stage.
A prenatal multi that optimally nourishes you can make all the difference between just getting by during and after pregnancy and feeling your very best. Let's not just survive. We definitely need and deserve to thrive. Needed is clinically backed, third-party tested, and formulated the best, in my opinion, prenatal vitamins. They took so much time to learn about women and why we are getting the bare minimum nutrients, and then designed the supplements that addresses women's needs at every stage of pregnancy and beyond. Needed's prenatals are filled with the optimal amount for both you and your baby and include important ingredients such as choline, folate, vitamin D, and more. Enjoy 20% off at thisisneeded.com with code VBAC20. That is thisisneeded.com and use code VBAC20. Back to today's episode.
Okay, cute Sammy. I'm excited to hear these stories. Thank you for joining us today.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me. It's like a really cool full circle moment to be here after binging on the podcast for months and months and months. So I'm excited to be here.
Well, thank you. All right. Well, I mean, every birth story starts with baby number one, and your first baby actually wasn't a C-section, right?
Yeah. So my first baby, I got pregnant in 2017 and had him in 2018. And I feel like so many other people on the podcast, I felt like I was pretty informed going into the birth. I mean, I read two books, you know, to me, I'm like, I'm so informed. And I took a hypnobirthing class, but I had a provider who she'd just been my OBGYN for a long time. So I decided to stay with her. And even though I didn't have a C-section with that first delivery and pregnancy, it definitely wasn't what I was hoping to get out of it. I went to 40 weeks and thought that I would have my baby right then and there. Didn't have a doula, you know, hadn't talked to a lot of people, but I was planning to go unmedicated with my delivery. And then the days kept going on. I got to 40 and 5 and finally started to go into labor. So I was really excited because my OB had scheduled an induction for me, I think the next day, actually, and got to the hospital and just like everything changed. We got there, we were excited, like fresh faced, we're having our baby today. And the minute we got there, they were picking up a lot of heart D cells. They didn't feel like the baby's heart rate was doing well, told me I needed to get on Pitocin immediately and that I would be really lucky to not have a C-section. So my like hopes for an unmedicated delivery kind of went out the window immediately. My OB came in and told me, you know, I really do think that a C-section is going to be the best course of action for us, but let's give you a couple of hours, see how things do with Pitocin, get you an epidural just in case. And after a few hours came in and she just said, you know, I really think we need to go to the OR right now and we need to get your baby out for his safety. So we scrubbed up, my husband and I, and she took us back to the OR. I was a wreck. Like I was crying and just so upset because no one had prepared me for that. You know, right. In my hypnobirthing class, all of the stories that were shared were really positive. We didn't really talk about what would happen in this type of situation. Like I said, I didn't have a doula. So we got to the OR and the anesthesiologist was actually running behind. He was doing another C-section and they didn't have another one on call, I guess. And she was like, you're dilated to a 10. So if you can get this baby out right now, like I'll let you push and try. And so I like pushed like my life depended on it, trying to get this baby out. He was sunny side up. So she did end up using forceps and a vacuum and we got him out in that time frame. And it was so cool. Honestly, after having this like experience that felt really scary and just not what I was wanting, I was kind of riding the high of my life to have still been able to deliver him. So didn't get my unmedicated delivery, but I was just really happy to have him there with me.
Yeah.
Yeah. So fast forward to my second pregnancy. I got pregnant in 2019 and had him during the pandemic in 2020 and decided to switch providers just because I felt like, you know, after going through that experience with her, it wasn't like a bad experience. It just wasn't what I was wanting. And to get there and have her like immediately pushing a C-section.
That's kind of unique. I feel like, did she ever like tell you exactly just the heart rate, like being, like, your heart rate's wonky. Let's put you on Pitocin. Like those two things often don't match. And it's like, oh, you'll probably end up there anyway, but we'll let you keep going. Like,
it was so bizarre. So like looking back at it for me, I do feel like there were, you know, signs that she just wasn't going to be a supportive provider of an unmedicated delivery all along. Like I told her I didn't want to have an epidural and she said, well, good luck. You'll probably change your mind, but you know, like I support you doing whatever you want to do. And we found out after he was delivered, the cord was wrapped around his neck twice. So that's what was causing the D-cells to happen. But that was what was hard for us to understand too. Like we were like, if it's emergent, why aren't we being, you know, taken back right now?
Right.
Yeah. So it just kind of felt like she wanted to get the baby out. It was over 40 weeks. And I felt like even though I had a great experience postpartum and I was fine, you know, I couldn't trust her anymore. I didn't feel like she was a safe person or someone who would like honor my wishes during birth. So I had heard of a doctor locally. Like a few of my friends had just raved about him. He's pretty popular in my neighborhood. I feel like a lot of different people go to him, but it's Dr. Thackeray at IMC.
Yeah.
So I switched over to him for that second pregnancy and immediately just really liked him. He was warm. He took a lot of time, you know, talking over everything, getting to know us in a way that most OBs, I would say, don't in the hospital setting. And I kind of let go of my hopes of having an unmedicated delivery. It just felt like with my first birth and postpartum, everything that could have happened did happen. I had this plan, you know, I had the birth plan. I wanted to have that unmedicated labor and it all went out the window the minute that we got there. So I felt like, what's the point in even, you know, trying to go unmedicated? There's so many unexpected things that can come up in birth, and went forward with that pregnancy. It was a pretty normal pregnancy. Honestly, I felt great. I'm one of those like weird people who enjoys being pregnant. So just soaked up the time with my oldest son. We were having another boy. But when the pandemic really, you know, started to get serious, we were terrified. We were being told, you know, it was like every week things were changing. You could have people come with you and support you. You couldn't. My birth partner may not be able to be there with me. So we were a little nervous about that, but got to 40 weeks exactly and went into labor again. And I was so excited. Like, it's really funny because my husband and I took pictures outside of the hospital. Just like, we were both really excited to hopefully have, you know, a more normal experience of being able to deliver in the delivery room without all of those interventions. We got checked into the hospital and they checked the baby's position and they told me that he was head down. And then shortly after that, my water actually broke. So they called my OB to come in and just check on how things were progressing. And when he came in, he was like, he checked me and he was like, I don't think that I'm feeling the baby's head. Like, I think I'm feeling the baby's bum. And so they did an ultrasound. He was breech, but he wasn't even just like
sideways.
Complete breech. Yeah, he was lying transverse. And it just brought up like a lot of anxiety and emotions from that first delivery. Like, I'm like, no, like I avoided a C-section. I really don't want to go back to the OR. I don't want to have forceps. I don't want to have all of these different things happen. And they tried to perform an ECV. They actually tried for like 45 minutes to get him to flip. But
which is also impressive, just to say, for a provider to do that during labor, that's impressive.
Yeah, it was. And he brought in one of his partners and they, like, I could tell that they were trying really, really hard, but he would not budge. They told us that because my water had broken, it was just likely that there wasn't enough fluid in there to get him to
rotate,
flip back. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And we don't know. I mean, at this point, the nurses that checked us in told me that he was head down, but we don't know if he flipped when my water broke or if he'd been sitting breech for a long time. In any case, he wasn't flipping. And my husband and I asked for some time just to like think about our options, but his foot became prolapse. And they told us, you know, this is like an emergency situation. We need to get him out right now. If the cord prolapses, it could be pretty risky. So They wheeled us back to the OR. It was kind of like deja vu for me for my first delivery. I'm like sobbing. I'm like, oh, I don't want to have a C-section. I've got a baby at home to think about this time around. I told him I'd be back in 2 days, you know.
Yeah.
Just a lot of emotions brought up. And they took us to the OR and kept having to give me like medication after medication. So they lay down. Obviously, so many people listening to the story are going to be able to relate to what it's like in there, but it's freezing cold. They laid me down and strapped me onto the bed and I was shaking. I felt like I was going to vomit. So they just kept giving me all these medications. They finally started to perform the C-section and I just had like tears rolling down my face and the anesthesiologist like bent down and he was like, don't worry. My wife had to have all C-sections with our babies and she's fine. And like, it was just like the weirdest, situation. Yeah.
Probably out of the goodness of his heart of like, you're going to be okay. My wife is okay. But it's like, not really what you say to someone in that moment either.
Yeah. It felt kind of like invalidating, like that I was having a hard moment, you know, but, ultimately, they got my son out. They took him and cleaned him off. And when they brought him over to me, I mean, I can barely remember what it was like, but I couldn't hold him. I was shaking. It was a really hard moment to not be able to have that like immediate connection with him. So we got back to the recovery room and things went fine for the most part. I did have a pretty bad hemorrhage and they kept having to come in and they were going to open me back up at one point, but you know, all in all, like it was fine. My son was healthy and I was really grateful for that. But I think the hardest part for me was just kind of like I said with the anesthesiologist, just feeling like really invalidated in how hard the situation was. Like I wanted to get back to see my son. I'm pretty into fitness and health, like I talked about, and you know, hadn't really wanted to have this really long recovery from all of that. And people just kept saying, well, your baby's healthy. Like, that's what matters. At least your baby's healthy. And I think that that's a really hard thing sometimes for moms to hear because,
yes,
as the mom of the baby, I want them to be healthy more than anyone. Like,
yeah, it's a no duh situation.
Yeah, that's my number one goal. And so, funny enough, I found the VBAC link in the hospital when I was lying in my hospital bed through those 3 days, you know, just feeding him and spending time with my baby and started listening to the podcast then and just thought if I ever go down this road again and have another baby, I really want to have a different experience from these first two deliveries. I want to be able to hold my baby the minute that they're born, not be so drugged up that I'm having to like, you know, kind of come out of being groggy and things. So that postpartum, to make like a really long story a little bit shorter, my postpartum situation with my son, the recovery was okay, but it was really hard. It brought up a lot of just postpartum anxiety for me, a lot of different things with the pandemic. We weren't able to have visitors, not being able to like be outside or move around the way that I wanted to immediately. So the podcast really helped me to get through that. But fast forward to 2023, and I got pregnant for a third time and was just excited to hopefully do things different this go around. Mm-hmm. So we'd had two boys and found out that we were expecting a girl, and I'm a pretty like type A person. So I devoured all the information that I could about VBAC and realized I really hadn't known that much going into my first birth. You know, I thought that hypnobirthing class was enough and it really wasn't. So I hired a doula who was just local here to me in Salt Lake. She's amazing. Her name is Jamie Kowalk. A friend had referred her to me and just got to work on a lot of different things. I did chiropractic. I worked with a pelvic floor PT. I actually worked with a therapist too to kind of go through some of the just like postpartum anxiety that I had experienced after the second time around, to hopefully have someone in my corner in case I had that going on again. But once we found out that we were pregnant, I did consider switching providers again. I just thought, you know, can I go through another delivery with the provider who did my C-section? And I did interview a couple of other providers. We met with a midwife pretty early on and kind of had like a weird experience. I don't blame her, I don't fault her or anything, but she was the first person to give me an ultrasound when I was pregnant, and she had thought that we were having twins. So she gave me the ultrasound and said, you know, I'm kind of seeing two babies here. I don't see two heartbeats. I think it's likely that you lost a baby fairly early. And when we went to get an ultrasound after that, that she recommended, the tech was like, that's not two babies. That's a yolk sac. Like, this is just the baby. This is the yolk sac. You're only pregnant with one. Yeah. So it was kind of, it's just like a surprising experience. But what I realized from that was that I had wanted to call my old OB the whole time and just like verify everything that she was saying with him. Mm-hmm. And I just didn't think that I could like fully trust her because I already had a pretty strong relationship developed with him. So I did choose to stay with my same provider. I had had some friends who'd known him and, you know, shared stories of him doing VBACs that they'd heard of and talked to him about it. I mean, I think the one thing that was kind of hard was that he was really VBAC supportive when I shared my plans to hopefully, you know, have a VBAC, but he wasn't like a huge cheerleader. Like, he wasn't like, I'm going to get you your VBAC. We're going to go in and do this. It was like really realistic. We'll try to do everything that we can and, you know, kind of see how it goes. But I appreciated that ultimately. So we had, I mean, I had a fairly normal beginning part of my pregnancy, found out we were expecting a girl, which was shocking to us after having two boys. And then I got to the gestational diabetes screener, which was something that I had never worried about. Like I said, I'm pretty involved in health and fitness at a high level. I watch my diet really closely, and I failed the screener pretty bad, like pretty terribly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So ended up going on to pass the 3-hour test, which was good. But after that, I really felt like, you know, pretty excited about the VBAC, and I felt this hope that I could do it. I feel like meeting with my doula was really powerful because we went through, you know, not only like my ideal situation and scenario of what would happen, but also what things could look like if I did have to have another C-section. And I think that that was one of my favorite parts of the process of working with her, was just planning for everything when there weren't emotions at stake in it, you know, not trying to make decisions in the heat of the moment in labor, but
yes,
making them far ahead of time.
Yes. Yeah. So important.
Yeah. It's like a total game changer. But then we got to about 36 weeks. And I had been doing, like, when I say all the things, like, I really had been doing just everything in my power to hope for an optimal positioning with the baby. Like I said, the chiropractor, the spinning babies, everything. But I actually asked my provider for an ultrasound that they don't usually give at 36 weeks unless there's some type of indication that it's necessary. He'd been feeling the baby, like, externally and thought that she was head down, but I just didn't want to go into the delivery with any unknowns or surprises. So we got that ultrasound and went in, and like the minute that the tech touched my stomach, they're like, and this is a really breached baby. This baby is completely breached. And yeah, it just, that brought up a lot of emotion for me from my previous deliveries. And like, what am I going to do? Like, we haven't had a baby in a good position yet. I've already been doing all of the things to hope to get her in an optimal position. And when I met with the nurse right outside the room, she was like, well, it's fine. You can always have a C-section. It's not a big deal. We just did a couple today, you know? And so
you're like, again,
yeah,
not what I'm wanting though.
So a lot of my like hopes and dreams and everything, you know, went out the window. So I, from there, got to work on all of the things that I could do to get baby to flip. Like, I was reading forums, I was Googling. It was honestly so exhausting. I look back on that time, and for anyone else who's had a breech baby and tried to get them to turn, it is like an emotional roller coaster. And
yeah.
So we did acupuncture, I did moxibustion, I did like the spinning babies, flip a breech baby. I downloaded, this is like so funny, but this hypnosis track to try to get your baby to flip.
Yeah.
I was doing hypnosis. I went to the pool and was, I attempted to do handstands in the pool at 37 weeks pregnant. I was not successful. How anyone can do that, I have no idea. But, you know, I was laying upside down on like an ironing board, trying to encourage her to flip. I put ice packs on the top of my stomach, and it was completely exhausting. I mean, in hindsight, I wouldn't change the effort that I put into hoping to get her to move, but it's hard to be in that space where you're so far along pregnant and then trying to do that and being unsuccessful. So
it's consuming, like it consumes you because you're like, I want entirely. This so bad. And it's like sort of within our control, but a lot of it is out of our control.
Yeah. Yeah. So I actually ended up posting in the Facebook group and just asked if anyone had recommendations local to me for a provider who would consider delivering a breech baby.
Breech.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And someone recommended Dr. Silver at the University of Utah.
Bob Silver.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And we actually did meet with him when I was 38 weeks pregnant. I may have been like 37, but we went and met with him and he told me, you know, this baby is breech and if you want to try to deliver her, I'll do it. But I think that you should have an ECV first and just exhaust all of your options. So I was a little hesitant to go into another ECV after already having one that didn't work. I didn't really have high hopes, but went and met with Dr. Thackeray and he did perform an ECV. I didn't use an epidural or any medications, but she actually flipped really easily. Like it was super quick. Yeah, it was really cool. And I think like something that I didn't share, but leading up to that, I was working with my therapist a lot just on, you know, my mindset. I was pretty devastated when I found out that she was breech and had to kind of come to terms with the fact before we even went into the ECV or met with Dr. Silver, any of these things that like, you know, I'm trying to control all of these different variables. And I've done this with all of my births and it hasn't really gone the way that I wanted to. You know, my first baby, I thought that it was going to be fine to do it unmedicated. My second baby, I was like, I don't care what we do as long as I don't have a C-section. Then it ended in a C-section. And then to have her be breech, you know, I was exhausted from all those things that I was doing, but I just had to realize like I can show up and I can try to flip this baby on my own and I can try to get an ECV and I can hypnotize myself all day. But if that's not what's best for her and if that's not in the cards, like there is a level that is outside of your control when it comes to birth. I feel like was one of my biggest lesson. So when I was lying there as he was performing the ECV, I was just kind of like talking to myself and visualizing her flipping. But I was talking to her and just saying, you know, like if there's a reason why you can't flip, if this is not going to be safe for you, or if this is not what's best for you, that's okay. Like I'm going to do whatever you need me to do in order for you to get here healthy. And it was just like, it was only an ECV, but that was actually a really powerful moment for me in my third pregnancy and just letting go and letting the outcome be whatever it was going to be.
Yeah.
So she did flip, like I said. And then after that, I was doing like deep squats every day. I was like, just
get
watching
that baby
TV.
Engaged.
Yes, get her engaged in my pelvis. And I had a few more appointments with my provider and every time would ask him to do a scan just because I didn't believe that she would like stay head down, but she did. So I felt like we'd like kind of overcome our last hurdle. I was, you know, utilizing hypnobirthing tracks again. I don't think I mentioned it, but I did want to try and go for an unmedicated delivery this go around just because I found that, you know, every time I would get the epidural or get Pitocin or get anything, that's when everything would kind of go wrong. So I was trying to prepare for all that. And we found out that our provider was going to be out of town a few days after my due date. He got asked to go on like a last minute family vacation and said yes. And, you know, a lot of the other providers in his office are VBAC supportive, but I didn't really feel comfortable with anyone else being the one to deliver my baby.
Yeah.
So I had to just kind of again let go. Like, I'm like, okay, we've almost had gestational diabetes. You've been breech. We did the ECV. Like, now if we can just deliver this baby, it will hopefully all go well. So yeah, just kept doing those things the last couple weeks of pregnancy. And on the 4th of July, I started to go into labor and I was so excited. I started to feel those, you know, familiar contraction pains and didn't tell anyone. We went to a barbecue with some friends, didn't say anything. And then I decided to stay up all night on the 4th of July because after you've had two babies who would stay up when they're in labor, I'm like, what was I even thinking? But I stayed up all night watching TV, timing my contractions, you know, getting excited, didn't want to wake my husband up or anything. But in the morning, they'd kind of fizzled out. There wasn't a lot happening. And I had an appointment with my doctor later that day. And I should say at that point, I was like 39 weeks and 3 days, 39 and four. So went to that appointment. My husband ended up driving me and we brought our two kids with us because we didn't have any sitters lined up at that point. He said, you know, I think that things are going to pick up in the next day or so. I think that you're going to have this baby. And we were going to do a membrane sweep that day. That was something that I felt comfortable doing, but we ended up not doing it. And we drove back home because we live about 45 minutes from our hospital that we were delivering at. And I decided to make dinner and give my youngest a bath. And by the time I had that bath water like halfway filled, I couldn't even do it. I was just laying on the floor, like trying to breathe through contractions, but not able to do anything. So I'm like yelling at my husband in between, like, please come upstairs, give Harvey a bath. And we had not packed anything. I feel like we're like the worst third time parents. We were not ready to go. I think there was just like so much pressure surrounding getting her to flip and trying to prepare for all these other things. It almost felt like it would be jinxing it to be super ready for the delivery.
Super prepared.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we're throwing things into a bag and we have my mom come over because she was going to watch our two boys while we went to the hospital. And we just turned around and essentially went back. And it was really funny because when we went to go get checked in, they brought us back to a room and I was like, are you guys going to check me? Like, are you going to triage me? What's happening? And they were like, no, you seem pretty serious. We're just going to admit you and you can stay. So
awesome.
We were really excited about that. And again, it's like, I wanted to be excited. Like I was in my second birth, like take pictures and do things, but it's almost like, I have a friend who uses the term cautious optimism. And I think about that a lot. Like I just felt like I was optimistic, but also cautious because of everything that had happened in those prior experiences. So we did get checked in and we called our doula who decided to come in and meet us, but we didn't get a nurse for like 10 to 15 minutes. And I felt like my contractions were really picking up. So I remember like I opened the door and was like looking around like this hospital is dead. Where are all the nurses? Like, why is no one coming to do anything? And she finally showed up. And it was pretty clear, my doula got there about that same time, that our nurse was not super unmedicated supportive. She also didn't seem super like VBAC supportive. And so the minute that Jamie walked in, I was just like, okay, now I can breathe. I have someone here who's here to, you know, advocate for us and support me and just be mm-hmm. like an ear to bounce things off of. So she started to check me in. And to kind of, you know, like go through all the paperwork, the insurance stuff. And I remember just being on like the birth ball. We were trying a couple of different things because I felt like my contractions were pretty strong. And probably like 15, 20 minutes after Jamie had gotten there and our nurse had come in, I just started screaming, I can't do this. I can't do this. I can't do this. Like at the top of my lungs. And I remember it feeling like almost like an out-of-body experience. Like I didn't feel like I was screaming anything. I didn't feel like I was saying anything, but there were just words coming out of me. And my nurse said, you know, I think that we need to check you. And they checked me and I was complete. So Yeah, it was wild. We had not been there long. And so they started to get everything ready to go. And, you know, I thought from doing hypnobirthing and preparing and hypnosis and meditation and all these different things that I would be able to be calm and like present. And that was not my experience at all. And for a long time, like I should say afterwards, I felt kind of embarrassed. You know, you hear these stories or you watch like Christian hypnobirthing and these different videos of people like smiling and singing and they're quiet as they're having their babies. And that was not me. And now I can look back on that and I'm like, that's okay. Like I was just loud and like, you know, roaring through birth, but it all just was happening so fast. I felt really comfortable being on all fours. So I was in that position trying to start to push. But when my doctor came in, they actually did have me flip to lying on my back, which is something like looking back, I wish that that wouldn't have happened. But yeah, I flipped over and probably had her within, I don't know, 20 more minutes. So when we look at the time frame, it was like an hour after we got to the hospital that she was born. And it was just the most amazing, incredible moment of my life. And I think one of the coolest things about the whole thing was after she came out, they just handed her to me and put her on my chest. And they were like, do you want us to wipe her off? Should we go clean her off? Do you want us to put a diaper on her? And I was like, no, no one touch her. Just leave her right here. And yeah, we got to snuggle and cuddle and had that golden hour. And it was incredible.
You got that experience that you were waiting for, right? Yeah. That minute that you're like, okay, I did this. It's all over. I don't even have to question anything anymore. It's here. Yes. It happened. She's here on my chest. I yes. love that. I remember having that feeling of just like utter joy of like feeling that human right on top of you. And I feel like your photo is like exactly. I mean, it just says it all. It says it all exactly how you're feeling. Just yes. pure joy, amazingness. And I am so happy for you. I'm happy that even with the curves along the way with this baby, she was able to flip really easily. You were able to go through and show the efforts that you were able to do yourself and truly have this better experience. And that is so fast, like an hour after getting there, like, and like not really like having too much going on from being in the hospital, you know, not in the hospital at your visit to going home. Like that's quick.
Oh, it was shocking. It was really shocking. And I feel like for me, that was part of the reason why I was so just like loud and like it was oh, hard yeah. to believe that fast it was happening transition. So quick. Yeah. And I told my doula, like, I want to do the Rebozo. I wanted to try all these different positions. And we really didn't get to do very much because it happened so quickly.
It. Yeah. You didn't need it either. Oh, yeah. That is so awesome. And then I know that you had mentioned, you know, in your summary that you are an instructor or a personal trainer, right? Mm-hmm. I would yeah. love to talk about that too. And like all the things that maybe you did during pregnancy that you would suggest anyone checking out. And I know physical abilities are always different during pregnancy, but can you tell us more about that too? Like,
yeah, absolutely. So I am a personal trainer and a coach with a team here. We actually started local to Salt Lake called Fit Bliss Fitness. So I'm a coach and I'm also our COO. And we coach women in bodybuilding, powerlifting, strength athletes, and macro coaching. But primarily, I'd say the bulk of my clientele is just women who are wanting to get stronger, feel empowered, and change their body composition in a lasting way. That's not just like a, you know, a 6-week shred or a quick right. fix. It's all about creating sustainable habits and right. then getting strong while you do it. So for all three of my pregnancies, a huge part of that has been resistance training at a high level. And it's been different throughout each one. I was actually, it's a sport called powerlifting. I don't know if you're familiar with that, but it's essentially bench press, squats, and deadlifts that you compete in trying to kind of get your best number, your PR, mm-hmm. a personal record. And I powerlifted throughout that whole entire first pregnancy. And, yay. You know, there has been some research to support just easier, quicker labors and delivery when you are familiar with resistance training and that's something that you're doing consistently. So the second and third, I think I did go a little bit easier, not in the sense that I wasn't still training. I trained, you know, 4 to 5 days a week, some weeks three throughout my entire pregnancy, but just listening to my body a little bit more and not feeling like I had to prove anything or, you know, like be as strong as I maybe once was. But the things, yeah. So the big things that I focused on during pregnancy, resistance training, specifically still doing movements like squats and core work that's important for a pregnant person, not things like crunches or obliques or twisting, but things like Pavlov press, side planks. There's a lot of different movements that you can still safely do when you are pregnant, working on like transverse abdominal breathing throughout my pregnancy. And then the other things that I focused on the other side of the coin there was just my nutrition at a high level. So a lot of protein intake. Yeah, protein is huge. Fiber in my diet throughout, a lot of, you know, veggies, fruits, getting in really good sleep each night, sun exposure, just a lot of different things to take care of your body during a time when it's doing so many different things. You know, it's not only fueling you, but also your baby. And if you're depleted, that's not going to be ideal for either of you.
Right. Absolutely. I mean, I feel like with my first, I kind of started doing the running. Like I was like, I'm trained for half marathon. And then my provider's like, oh, you have round ligament pain. You can just stop, just stay walking. And that was such a bummer to me that I did that I stopped. And then I didn't focus on my nutrition at all. I mean, seriously. My husband worked like 2 to 10 and I was eating like Chinese food, like all the time. My protein was probably not even close to like 50 grams a day, like really, really, really bad. And I think that's one of the reasons why I now feel so passionate about like good nutrients and like physical activity, because yeah, I mean, I ended up training and becoming a bar coach and stuff, but really dialing in on that. And I do believe like what you were saying, like studies have shown, like I had a better postpartum, I had a better labor along the way because I was able to focus on that. And so I love that you, one, I love that you did it. And two, I love that you help people do it and help people break it down and understand. And if someone wanted to check you out, do you do only online? Do you do just in person? What does that look like?
Yeah. So I used to be a personal trainer in a gym here local alongside it with my clients, but now ever since COVID, it's fully online. So we have a website that's fitblissfitness.com. And then I'm on Instagram at SammyGFit. And yeah, it's really cool. There are a lot of stereotypes out there about what women can and can't do when they're pregnant. Mm-hmm. And oftentimes it's not the advice that we need to hear. Like I remember someone in my first pregnancy saying like, oh, don't move that chair over. You're pregnant. You wouldn't want to hurt yourself. You know, you can still lift and be strong, and you can enjoy foods that you like still too, while eating enough protein and giving your body what it needs. So
right. Getting the right nutrients. Yeah. Cause that helps you and your baby as well. Mm-hmm. So, okay. Yeah. I love it. Well, we'll make sure to tag you so everyone can go find you and put it in the show notes. Thank you so much for sharing your stories. They're amazing. And I'm so stinking happy for you.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Would you like to be a guest on the podcast? Head over to thevbacklink.com/share to submit your story. For information on all things VBAC, including online and in-person VBAC classes, the VBAC blog, the worldwide database for VBAC doulas, and more, head over to thevbacklink.com. Congratulations on starting your journey of learning and discovery with the VBAC Link.
Hello, hello. Thank you for being with us today. I'm excited for today's episode, but wanted to take a quick moment to talk about prenatal vitamins. As a doula, I encourage my clients to achieve optimal nutrition through food. However, even with the most thoughtfully planned diet, it is nearly impossible to meet the daily requirements through food alone. Ideally, you should start taking a prenatal before you find out you're pregnant, or as soon as you test positive. P.S. If this is you, congrats. Prenatal vitamins help nourish and support your body while helping you grow that cute little human inside. Nutrients like choline and folate in prenatal vitamins support healthy brain and spinal cord development in early stages of pregnancies. Prenatal vitamins are unfortunately not all made the same. My favorite prenatal brand is called Needed. I first discovered them through our Facebook community, actually. They are very supportive of our community and have secured 20% off to all of our mamas with code VBAC20. Go to thisisneeda.com and enter in code VBAC, VBAC20 at checkout for 20% off.